I am a kid and I love writing for the little girl. That was me, that didn't have access to even hugs most days. So, you know, I'm sticking with this. If I could work in the children's space all the time, I love my authors. I love all of my authors at Hay House. But if I could just like hire another president and be in the children's space, I 100% would.
Welcome to the Be It Till You See It podcast, where we talk about taking messy action, knowing that perfect is boring. I'm Leslie Logan, Pilates instructor and fitness business coach. I've trained thousands of people around the world, and the number one thing I see stopping people from achieving anything is self-doubt. My friends, action brings clarity, and it's the antidote to fear. Each week, my guests will bring bold, executable, intrinsic, and targeted steps that you can use to put yourself first and be it till you see it. It's a practice, not a perfect. Let's get started.
Hi, Be It Babe. Okay, get ready. Get ready. So our guest today is Rebecca Baruki. She is the founder of Rojas Publishing. And oh my goodness. What an incredible story. What an incredible journey. What an incredible life she is living. And I am so grateful, Roxy, for you making this massive connection. I am in awe of what Rebecca is doing, and also like her ability to share that and also give you options. So we're gonna talk a little about activism here. We're gonna talk about her growing up and then becoming an author, a published author, and then switching from a publishing company to owning her own and starting her own, and then really taking care of authors. And then also the work she's doing for her children, K through 12, for reading. And you're gonna be fired up. I'm fired up. There is information on how to support her publishing company. There's also, I'm gonna put some show notes in with the charities that like little readers that you can donate to, because it is called littlereadersbigchange.com. So we'll make sure that all those things are in there. If you're wondering like a little bit why this matters, I can tell you right now that because my mom made sure that during my year of kindergarten, she read to me 500 books, that my ability to dream, be creative, kind of go outside what the world is today and think of something that could possibly happen and then make that happen is because of books. And, I took a lot of years off of reading, and then I recently started reading again. And not reading, I've read a lot of books. They're just mostly workbooks, but like reading some fiction and like just some other stuff. And I'm a ferocious reader. I love it. And I think it is important for children of all ages everywhere to see themselves in books out there. And so Rebecca Baruki is making that happen. She's one of many people, and I'm so honored to share her with you today. So take a listen, and if you can support her publishing company or Little Readers Big Change in any way, please do. And wait till you get those Beat Action Items. They're brilliant. They're amazing. And they're going to support you. Here is Rebecca Baruki. Loves, it's here. OPC Summer Camp. You know, that thing we started last year? Well, we're doing it again this year, and we're making it bigger and better than ever because we have teachers from all over the world, which means all day long, you can nerd out with me at Camp Zoom from the comfort of your own home in your favorite Pilates workout outfit without having to get bugs or dirt or weird camp food that's like some weird slaw. No, you can have the amazing food from your own home. You can be whatever clothes you want to be in, and you can join us all day long for whatever workouts and workshops you sign up for. In fact, you can even do a whole day pass and save the most money. In fact, up to 56% off if you buy the day pass. So go to opc.me/events to see the full schedule and lineup of events. If you only have access to a mat, we've got plenty of stuff for you. We've got reformer. We've got some happy hip reformer with you. We've got so many amazing things. You can go to opc.me/events to see the whole schedule, all 14 teachers, and all the goodness that's going to happen at Camp Zoom. And I'm your camp director. Woo! All right, Be It Babe. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited for today's guest. She's a connection with a dear friend who's also been on the show, Roxy Menzies. And so we have Rebecca Baruki here today. She is a self-published author, which is just, I think it's interesting. We have to even identify between self-published and like publisher-published because writing a book in your both. Okay. So yeah. She's hyphenated. She's multifaceted. Author of children's books. And I'm so excited to have you here. Rebecca, will you tell everyone who you are and what you rock at?
Okay. Well, I'm Rebecca. You introduced me, got my name right. That's awesome. Yeah. Pronouns are he, they. I am the president and founder of Rojas Publishing, also Wheat Penny Press, which preceded Rojas, which was the children's publishing house. And then also the Little Readers Big Change Initiative, which is our nonprofit that provides literacy, our literacy resources and books and author visits to K-12 schools in under-resourced districts, And we also support Black-owned indie bookstores and Black and brown creators. So we do a lot.
I do a lot. You do a lot.
And I have 5 kids. I can't forget them. That's my most important job, and 1 grandbaby. So,
oh my God, you don't look old enough to have a grandbaby. And also, when you said 5 kids for a split second, I thought you were joking, like just saying, I do all this and I have 5 kids. But then it's like, no, no, she's serious.
She really does all that.
It's 5 kids. Okay. I feel like we have to go back a little bit. Like, was it always a dream of yours to be an author? Was this something you fell into? I also, you know, I think it's amazing what you're doing for readers of schools. Like, I grew my, thank goodness my mom made sure I read. I think it changed my life, you know? So can you tell me how this, where do we begin?
So my parents didn't make sure I read at all. I grew up in a lower middle class, or not middle class, I'm sorry, lower middle or working class family in a very small working class town. Lived under the poverty line my entire pre-adult life. Really struggled with food insecurity, all that stuff. So it was really a matter of just survival. But I loved school and I loved to write. I absolutely did not dream of becoming a writer because I didn't think that was even something you could do for a living. And I had a teacher, Glenda Autry. She was my first Black teacher in middle school. I'm mixed race. And so she kind of like took all like the Black and brown girls under her wing. And there was one report card. She wrote a note home, and I still have the note, and said, Rebecca's writing is beautiful. I can't wait to read one of her books one day. And it was just like that glimmer of, oh, that's something that I can do and people think I could do, that set me not on a path to writing, but set me on a path to explore my creativity, even on the side. I was a teen mom. I had 3 kids before I was 25. So there were a lot of obstacles in me going my own way. But I'm also completely unemployable. I'm autistic. I hate being outside. I don't do well in front of crowds of people. So I had to kind of make up my own way, and I hustled and created a platform, a wellness platform. I was doing yoga and meditation for a really long time. I was published with Hay House, 2 books with Hay House. Long story short, they're super racist and exclusive over there. So I had to leave in 2020 and start my own publishing house, knowing nothing about publishing.
And so that's what I'm looking in the back of your office, Row House Publishing. That's you. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's...
Gosh. Okay. So, wow. Your teacher, like I almost had tears in my eyes when you're reliving that moment. It's so beautiful. It's amazing. I think how like something that how could she know like how impactful that could have been? I mean, maybe she did, but also like, you know, I think of like maybe some of the teacher's notes I got home and very few of them I kept. Like that's really powerful. Also think it's really difficult for someone to leave something that in air quotes is secure, a publishing house like that. What was, mm-hmm. Do you mind sharing? Like, was an easy decision? Did you have to like really think about it? Like, cause I just wonder, like some people are just like, I had to do it. And other people I'm like, well, you know, like, especially in my life, I grew up, I wasn't impoverished that much as like that, mm-hmm. as low as yours, the situation was, but we were just like above that. Right. So we were just enough that we couldn't get any of the extra help. And so, for a long time, like people know who listen to the podcast, I don't answer my phone because I think it's a bill collector. Like I'm so conditioned to like screening the call.
Every time I go to the grocery line, I have my debit card. I'm like, do I have enough in the bank? Like I totally do. And it's going to be scary for the rest of my life.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean like people don't realize, like I was a little girl, like at the age of 11, I can't believe the world let you do this. At the age 11, I would take a check and write it for more. That's because my parents taught me to write it for more, because then you'll get the cash and then fingers crossed it's when there's money in the bank and no one bounces a check at the grocery store. Like, so I do understand that. So I guess like when I hear things like where you stand up for something that's so much you believe in, but also is like a livelihood for you, I guess I just wonder what that decision felt like.
I don't know if it's a cultural difference. It's the way I was raised. My parents were activists in their own way. They were pacifists. They were adamantly anti-war in any circumstance. So I grew up with this sense of it is up to us to stand up and say something. And also it's up to us to share and redistribute wealth. We had nothing and we were constantly giving. So that's just, I don't know if it was a cultural thing. It's definitely something that is in Black and Brown communities, all marginalized communities, because there's no other way to survive than to help each other. So when I saw that, you know, I'm the brownest person in the room, and I said that to the CEO, and his response is, you know, well, you have to understand, Rebecca, that we cater to an affluent audience. I knew that not only did my people not belong there, but I didn't belong there. And it just became unacceptable for me, who already walks through the world with a lot of light skin privilege, you know, thin privilege, like all the things that I navigate white spaces really well. Like, it just felt completely gross for me to continue to benefit from this system. And if I thought about it, I don't know if I would have made the decision so quickly. I didn't really think about it. It's kind of like, oh, that's your answer. You know, you're not going to do anything. And it was in the middle of a meeting, actually, to discuss why they weren't addressing that 5 of the 12 disinformation dozen, the 12 people online that were responsible for most of the misinformation and disinformation around COVID. 5 of those people were their authors. And it was in a meeting to discuss, like, why you're not saying anything, or why aren't you coming out with a stance, and why aren't you talking about the uprisings happening all over the United States and Black Lives Matter and whatever. And their resistance, refusal to take accountability or to say that they have the power to do something was just like, I was like, I gotta go. My agent was sitting there like, I don't know if she didn't know that was gonna happen. And she's this like amazing white lady from New York, powerhouse, beautiful literary agent, had no idea really what I was saying, but was there for me. Mm. I just left. And I wasn't planning on starting my own publishing house. My former editor and then good friend, Kristen McGinnis, texted me late. I think it was a Monday night. And she said, you know, why don't you just start your own Hay House? And I, in my infinite wisdom and spunk, said, sure, why not? Let's call it Bay House. And then that's how it happened. That was in October of 2020. In November, we had the name registered. In February, we launched online with a fundraiser, and we raised $100,000 in the first 10 days. And so people wanted it.
Yes. Okay. Can you tell, okay, and maybe we can go on to other tangents that this is not what I want to talk about, but like, I guess like starting a publishing house, that is not an easy thing to do. You do need money. That's why publishers have the money to put books out there.
Stupid hard. We needed the money. And this was very interesting for me because I was very familiar with fundraising in terms of mutual aid, where it's just like direct giving to people who need it, paying people's electric bills. That was my whole life. And it was definitely something that I was engaged in as an activist at that time. But, you know, so going out and asking for money wasn't a hard thing for me, but the scale, like we thought we needed to raise $800,000. We ended up blowing past that, raising $1.2 million. And these were small money donations. Like, this was $5, $20, $100, because that's how we do, right, in this community. Yeah. And, you know, we hit that mark. I didn't realize, I didn't know the historic value of this. Only 150 women to date right now, 150 Black women have raised more than $1 million from venture capital. So it just doesn't happen at all. Women don't raise this much money. And so going in blindly kind of helped me. I didn't know how hard it was going to be. I didn't know the obstacles that were ahead. But
that's probably better.
Yeah, exactly. It was
much better to not know.
But one of my mentors, a Black man, a Black executive in finance, he said, like, look, this isn't going to be a matter of you going into rooms and them saying, so how much money are we going to make together? It's going to be people asking you, how are you not going to lose my money because of where you come from, because of who you are, what you are. And that was demoralizing. That was hard. But
yeah, we did. That stings. I think like I had maybe a year ago, I had a woman on who is in tech and financing. Mm-hmm. And she like is one of the few women who's in the rooms, like with where the money is raised. And her whole thing is like, there's not that many women in general getting money from venture capital. And then she's like, and then you go and you break it out by color. And it's like, it's just not even close. There's not even like a way to go. How do we bridge this? How do we make it like it's not going to be fair?
It doesn't even chart. Like on the graph, like you can't even see it. And yes, that's a problem. But what I know as someone, you know, with that's in the Black community, there's a way. Yeah. So it was really just being completely transparent. This is what we need. This is what we plan to do. This is how we're different. This is how we're, it's for us and by us. And so we rallied that ground support, that there was a groundswell support from my community, my post community, but it was also 2021 when people really wanted to be good. And so there was a lot of, we capitalized a lot on that wake of 2020, you know, that was horrible, horrific, but some, at least some Black folks, Brown folks, were able to kind of get a foothold, start their careers and have their voices amplified.
So your publishing house, is it specifically for Black and Brown authors? Like, what do you guys focus on? Is it for everyone? Is it for like,
it's for everyone, all genres. We have 5 imprints now. So it's children's, it's romance, it's YA, so many beautiful, beautiful books, beautiful people. The requirement to get published with us or one of our imprints are, one, you're writing through the lens of social justice. And this could be done through fiction, anything. It's disability justice. It's Black and Brown civil rights. It's all of that. So you have to be writing through the lens of social justice. You have to either be starting a conversation or expanding on a conversation in a way that has not been heard yet. So that's kind of easy to do when you're going into the margins to find stories, because these voices just aren't being honored. They're not being amplified. So we have these incredible books that are New York Times bestsellers. One hit number one on the New York Times children's list, which is impossible, beating out Eric Carle. It's bananas.
Oh my God.
These are Black, Brown, queer, disabled authors that were not being looked at by anybody. And it's like, where do they come from? It's like, we've been here.
Yeah.
We've been here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, because I interviewed a lot of people who are authors and I know what it's like. And then I have some friends who publish, and the amount of effort they do to be a bestseller, it's insane. So just congratulations and so much awe and so excited. You mentioned children's books, and I love that there are more children's books out there today than I feel like when I was a child, that are a little bit, that show off more things than Everybody Poops and you know, like in the Velveteen Rabbit. What made you which is why is it a children's book? It's so sad. My mom is in tears reading it to me, and I'm like, why? Before we got to the
Can I tell
part.
You something though?
Yeah.
The Velveteen Rabbit is actually my favorite children's book. I have so many different editions of it, and I have the fairy tattooed on my back.
Do you really?
Which is an unfortunate residual thing from my teen years. However, though, I do love that book so much. But there are better books. There's books that are teaching our kids things to really prepare them for the world and prepare them to be really awesome people. So I'm really excited about the new wave in children's literacy.
There's a really cool area in town where I love to shop. It's all small business owners. There's actually a 14-year-old who owns a store there. I'll send you her stuff. You'll love her store. And it's all about social activism for children. Like, it's freaking cool. But I buy children's books from all of these places because they show off different types of people, different types of children. And I give it to all my nieces and nephews. And I swear my family thinks I'm like this, like, why don't you just get them the coloring book? And I'm like, no, I don't know what their school's like. I don't know what they're being exposed to. They need to be exposed to different people. And so I think it's really cool that these books exist in the first place. What made you want to write children's books over? Like, was that the first book you wrote? I don't know the history of that.
So no, that's fine. The first book I wrote was a book about accessible meditation called You Have 4 Minutes to Change Your Life. I grew up without healthcare. I was going to a lot of, state-run medical facilities. And it was just really hard for me to be able to access, especially the mental health care I needed as a kid. So keeping that in mind, and then getting older and doing my yoga training and teaching yoga and teaching meditation in New York City and seeing who was in the room and seeing how much people were being charged. I'm like, first of all, meditation is like, it's free. Like, you can do it anywhere. I had been practicing every day since I was 15 years old. I knew what it had done for me. And I was like, so how do I get this to more people? How do I make this more accessible? And I was working on that on my platform with these little 4-minute meditation videos. I was getting messages from soldiers who had PTSD saying, this is the first time I was able to sit still and close my eyes and feel safe. So that all kind of evolved into wanting to make things accessible for adults, wanting to make things accessible for neurodivergent and disabled folks. And then, oh, well, kids. And I have kids, and I, as an autistic person who struggles very much with reading long form books, even though I'm a publisher, I struggle with reading. I love picture books. So my first attempt, I went and took some classes at a local community college, and I wrote this really terrible story that had 2,000 words. It was way too many. I read it to my kids' second grade class, and they were like, we like it, but they were falling asleep in the middle. I got their feedback, workshopped it with the 7-year-old, and came up with Zara's Big Messy Day, which is a book about mental health, about anxiety, about self-regulation, about meditation and breathing. And it kind of just blew up. No publisher wanted it. Hay House didn't want it. We shopped it around to 5 others. Same response. We don't want it. We don't want it. That was my intro into self-publishing. So it was after I already had 2 books published that I decided, okay, let me try this myself. Super hard. Learned a lot. The book hit. And now it's part of the second grade curriculum of the largest online K-12 school in America. It's definitely the book that built Row House. It paid a lot of our bills in the beginning. And there's 3 more. There's 3 more titles after that. I love kids. I am a kid.
And I'm glad to hear you have 5. So I'm just so glad you love them.
I love them. I have them. I love kids. I am a kid, and I love writing for the little girl that was me that didn't have access to even hugs most days. So, you know, I'm sticking with this. If I could work in the children's space all the time, I love my authors. I love all of my authors at Hay House. But if I could just like hire another president and be in the children's space, I 100% would.
Well, so you know what? I think we can manifest that. I think, and we can make it reality. I think like it's a little bit more money and you can, I say that not as a joke. I say that as seriousness. Like I built my businesses and I hated being the CEO. Like I just wanted to be with my members. I just wanted to be in creation mode. And, it was actually in 2020 when I met this woman, she said, well, you and Brad, like, let's just see what you guys, like what your strengths are. And his strength is being the entrepreneur. It's being the CEO. It's being the person. He's literally in a meeting right now that he's like, you want to join this? I'm like, in 0. No, I don't. Yeah. Here are my thoughts. Okay. And it was the hardest thing we ever did, because obviously that year, everything in our business changed, like everyone else's lives. But I was able to rewrite a new job description for myself, my own company. And this time, as we're talking right now, I'm working on a new job description because I'm able to like even offload even more of those things. So I just say that I really want that for you. And I really believe it's possible that there could be a new president and you can be in charge of children's.
It is 100% possible. It's in the plan. I think that that's where I thrive. It's where I need to be. It's where my advocacy feels best. I love going into schools. I do that very often and reading to the kids. And I get to have that opportunity to look at this. You know, most of the schools, it's going to be predominantly Black and Brown, sometimes predominantly Spanish speaking. We go to Baltimore, North Jersey, Philly, Camden. And when I go into these schools, I know that they haven't seen someone that looks like them, that talks like them, that's from where they're from. And for me, I'll say this, for so many people that are going into these schools, it's about charity. It's about charity and it's about feeling good about themselves. Yeah. They love the kids. They want to help the kids totally, but it's different. It's a different energy when you look at these kids like your family.
Yeah.
Like these are my kids. These are my cousins. They're like my little nieces and nephews. They're from the hood, just like me. And I don't need to teach them how to write. I don't need to tell them like the path to success. I just need to say like, this is possible. Like my teacher did for me.
Yeah.
And now I have all these kids like send me thank you notes with their little stories and tell me how to be like authors. It's freaking rad. I love it so much.
That's so cool. That's so cool that so many of them can think that that's a possibility. Like you said in your story,
it's all it takes.
Yeah.
And it's all it takes really for so many kids. It's just to say that it's possible. And I'll say that when we were starting Row House and people that have become my good friends who were brought in to kind of mentor us or guide us, very successful women in publishing. One said like, look, I don't think that you girls are ambitious necessarily. I think that what you're trying to do is impossible. Like, it can't work. And my co-founder, who's a white woman from Northern California, definitely had her own share of hardship in her life, but felt very defeated after that call. She was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? It's impossible. And I was like, girl, you think that's the last time or the first time someone said to me, like, I'm a high school dropout. I'm a teen mom. I've hustled all my life. It's fine. It's fine. And it's really about the people who think it's impossible lack the imagination or the experience to understand what can be. It's like they haven't seen it, so they don't think it could be done.
Yeah. So. And I think, like, it's an interesting word, impossible, because I think for some people, like, I think there's some parts of my life, if someone told me this dream was impossible, I would like figure out a way to show them how it is. Like, there's like some parts of that. And then there are some things that if I'd heard that word, it might have taken me a while to pick myself back up off the ground again. So I think it's such an interesting word. It can fire you up and it can also defeat you. But I feel like I am also the person, like, who has the right to tell you something that's impossible but you? Like, that's like kind of, I don't know where I learned that. And that's an interesting thing, but I think it's so cool that you and your business partner had each other, like, to kind of do this together. Yeah. Cause it's not doing anything, like, it's not easy. You need multiple people to support things, but also that she had you to be like, hey,
we shook each other. That was the process from here. And she really only came in as a co-founder for the beginning stages. She didn't even want to be part of the company. She's like, let me help you and then bounce. So she's still alive, but she's no longer with Row House. Yeah. I love her very much. She went on to start her own project, Rise Books. And, but yeah, we needed each other. And that sisterhood, that community, that's everything that Row House is about. It's called Row House because I grew up in a brick attached 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house with a big family with people coming in and out, you know, like picking up the street kid. And he's living with us for a while, who ended up being my brother-in-law, my sister, and he had been married for 40 years.
That's amazing.
So this is like, just, these are my people. This is where I come from. And I know that people who have not walked in my shoes can't understand my motivation, my drive, and they don't have my ancestors. Like, I'm always thinking about the ancestors. I'm thinking about both my parents who died 7 months apart in 2013. And I saw them die with so many dreams unrealized. And you have to at some point just be like, fuck it. Like, if not me, who? And also, like, if I don't do this, for what? We all end up in the same place. I don't know when my time's coming. I'm just going to be bold.
So, okay. You mentioned at the beginning that you're doing this work to also make sure that there's like books, for children in K-12, where there's not access. Can you talk to me about how, like, is that from the publishing company? Is that a different organization where you are like helping get books in their hands? Like, how long have you been doing that? And how did that start? Cause that is why I'm asking this is, like, I know a lot of our listeners have these big, bold dreams, and there's a lot of other things like paying their bills and putting food on the table and all that stuff. Yeah. And so
that's good.
You know, so like, what was the timeline and how did that start? Cause it's such an incredible dream to come to fruition, and it's going to impact so many.
So, like I was saying before, no matter what I have, I'm sharing. Mm-hmm. That's just the ethos that I live by. You must share. Like, that's what we're supposed to do. And, you know, my parents taught me and believed quite literally that every human being, we're siblings on this planet. So we have to be for the stranger as much as we are for the people that live in our house. So when I started fundraising for self-publishing Zara, it was, how do I make this happen, but also benefit other people because I have this vehicle to be able to bring in this money. So we had people buying books for classrooms. We took a portion to make sure that people got kids. I think that first campaign, we were able to donate like 1,000 books. Now, that was 2019. And since then, we've donated over 20,000 books to different organizations and schools. It's just a matter of when we get them, they also go out the door. And we have a nonprofit that allows us to do that more easily. The ease really comes from people wanting the tax write-off. So we're getting big donations and they can benefit from that too.
Hey, you know what? These billionaires get tax write-offs. People take advantage of the tax write-offs people and give it to places like your charity, your nonprofit, because it's going to make a bitter impact.
I tell my accountant every day, please give me the Jeff Bezos plan. My people came over here enslaved and as indentured servants from Scotland. I don't pay taxes. I'm good. So I'm not for anybody like wanting to save money. However, I will say that the majority of people who ask if there's a way that they can get a tax credit are coming from millionaires and confirmed billionaires. Yeah. It's not like the 20 here, the 100 here. Some people send thousands of dollars. They're coming from single moms, people that are saying like, this is all I have and I want you to have it. It's really beautiful to be reminded of who actually drives change and who's actually here, you know, for each other.
I mean, it really is like going back to impossible. Like when you think about different problems that are out there. And I also then look at the people who live in the communities, that's the communities that really make the biggest impacts and change, you know? Okay. So I want to know what you're excited about right now. Like what are your missions driven values? Like what's going on this year that we can put out into the world and our listeners can support you or we can just cheer you on? Like how can we make the world a better place? Cause you're in it.
So I want to tell you what we're doing with Row House specifically. Row House, what we do that's very different is that we are an equitable publishing model. So we're going into the margins and we're lifting up these voices, but also we're paying them. So every Row House author has a $40,000 advance. It's standard. And then they get 40% net profit share, which is about 4 times industry average. We pay our authors. We pay our creators. It means that I make less and that is okay, right? I don't need to be making $3 million a year. Not that I could pay myself that yet. So we have a lot of systems within the company that disallow for big gaps in wealth distribution. Like everyone is making a fair wage. We even pay our interns. We start at $25 an hour. Like that's what we do. So it's important work that we're doing to actually put money into the pockets of people that deserve it. And most recently, and this is what I'm fired up about, but not happy about, most recently, because of our politics and our values, we had a major funder pull $500,000 out of the company. So as we speak right now, in this moment, I am emergency fundraising, and I've been in meetings all day, and I will continue for however long it takes to make up that gap. And I'm excited about it because what has happened over this past 24 hours that this all came to a head, I have seen the most incredible amount of support come up from our community. I've seen Black women who have never received a dime of reparations show up for me in a way, showcasing us, amplifying, spotlighting us on their platforms, and then also contributing from their pocketbooks. It's just a good reminder of who really matters in my life.
Yeah.
And it's a reminder that community really works. So that's what's happening. I'm fired up about inequity, but we're taking care of it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's so important for people listening to know that, like, even when you overcome what was considered the impossible and you're doing all these things, that there's still massive obstacles. And,
it's scary. It's scary that the people in power and, you know, no matter how good you are, how smart you are, how, you know, smart and business savvy and all those other good things. And I speak well, I can go into rooms, I can entertain, that there's still so many people in power, you know, holding the strings and if they'll cut you off at any moment. So it's really super important for me to stress that, more Black women need to be in charge. Ownership needs to be put into the hands of marginalized people just because they know how to get things done. There's a level of empathy and compassion. There's just not enough leadership. There's not enough female leadership. There's not enough Black and brown, disabled, queer leadership. And when that shifts, everything's going to shift for everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Well, I like from your lips to God's ears too, like, seriously, as we're like recording this podcast, how much we've all had to like listen to going on. I want that sooner than I would love it happen yesterday, you know? So, will you do me a favor? Can you just tell us where our listeners, if they wanted to support Row House, how they can do that? Is that a possibility? Is that an ongoing thing or is it just right now? Because I would love
it's an ongoing thing. Right. It's an ongoing thing. It's easy. It's supportrowhouse.com.
Perfect.
Supportrowhouse.com goes to our GoFundMe. If you go to rowhousepublishing.com, you can find opportunities to invest for as little as $300. You can buy our books, which is awesome every day. So there's so many ways to support. And I also say that sharing is also currency. So tell people about us. Tell people, you never know who you're talking to or what they can do. So just keep spreading the word about our house and our authors. That's amazing too.
Thank you for bringing up all those different options. Cause I do tell people, I'm like, look, if you don't have any money to do things, like you can also just share, you know, like for people who listen to podcasts, writing a review is currency for a podcast host, and for a publishing house buying their book, that is asking for that book to be existing at the library if it's not there. Like those kinds of things can help, because there's always an option for supporting wherever your resources are. And I think that's really important. So thank you for sharing that. You're incredible. I'm so grateful that we get to highlight you. And I also got to learn from you, because what you are doing in this world is nothing short of amazing. And it's wildly needed in this moment.
I have a lot of help from my friends. I have a lot of help. We don't do anything.
And also, like, thank you for sharing that too, because it's not fun alone. It's so like, it's, if you're going to go through this life with ups and downs and obstacles, you've got to have people in it who are willing to like fight those fights with you. So thank you. Okay. We're going to take a very brief break, and then we're going to find out how people can find you, follow you. We got the support already. We'll do that again. And then your beat action for our listeners. All right, loves, it's super important to me that supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for 3 years, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. At 52 iterations of their formula and counting, their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and aim to find the best quality ingredients available. I love this so much, guys, because so many people think I have to get it right the first time, and they have done 52 different iterations. I freaking love that. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. I really do drink it, and trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's tested for 950 contaminants and banned substances, while the industry standard typically only tests for 10. Holy moly. I know that like I'm a recovering overachiever over here, but I'm super glad AG1 isn't. Okay, so taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by replacing multiple health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more in just one simple scoop. It's literally just one scoop. It's one scoop in one bottle of water. It's amazing. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. Y'all know I've had gut stuff, so that's why I've been doing it for so long. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/beit. That's drinkag1.com/BEIT. Check it out. Okay, Rebecca. Any other ways people can find you, follow you, connect with you, support you?
We are at Row House Pub everywhere on social media. It's where we talk about not only our books, we talk about other authors' books. We talk about different missions and different causes that you can become involved in. We are an activist platform. We are an activist business that wears our politics and our values on our sleeve. We all don't agree on all the things, but everyone at Row House is there with a huge heart and a spirit of community. So yeah, just find us online. We're there. Perfect. Hanging out.
Perfect. Okay. Last thing, bold, executable, intrinsic, targeted steps people can take to be it till they see it. What do you have for us?
Be it till you see it. Well, first of all, I tell all of my authors, but this works with anything. As soon as you have a dream or an idea, start talking about it. Don't wait until it's good. Don't wait until you have like the perfect presentation. But seriously, the moment I thought about writing a children's book, I went online and said, I'm writing a children's book. It's going to come out on this date. And then that was enlisting accountability partners. So that's something to definitely do. And then I don't know if this is a direct route to Be It and See It or whatever.
Anything goes here.
But be in community, which means on any level, whether it's volunteering to be a Girl Scout leader, which I was, or being involved in your church, be in community with others, be in the practice of giving, but also receiving, because that's what makes it community, that back and forth. Build those relationships. Those are the ones that will sustain you mentally. They can sustain you financially if you need it, but always be in community. I think it's great for, you know, all levels of health and well-being. Definitely, definitely important. And it puts you in the spirit of feeling like you're doing good, even if you don't feel like you're doing enough, yeah, which is wrong. And then I'm always encouraging people to advocate and be an activist in your own way. I believe just like there are as many ways to meditate as there are people on this planet, there's as many ways to be an activist. We have a children's book coming out called Stand Up, and it's about people who are disabled in wheelchairs and how they're activists, and people who kneel to stand up in activism. And there are so many ways to do and be good in your community, and just identify that for yourself. Don't compare your activism or your advocacy with anybody else, but just do something lovely for somebody else every single day, please. Yeah. And yourself. Yeah. Someone else and yourself every day.
Beautiful and brilliant.
That's what I got. I hope it was specific enough.
So specific. I'm in love. I'm so grateful this happened today. You are wonderful. I'm so grateful. All right. And thank you, Roxy, for allowing us to have this special moment. We are so, like, I'm just honored. Y'all, how are you going to use these tips in your life? Let us know, tag Row House Publishing, tag the Be It Pod, share this podcast with a friend. If you've got a friend who wants to write a book and it's going to fall in line with that Row House stuff, you got to send them this so that they can see that there's a place out there for them. You know, I mean, I think it's incredible. So everyone have an amazing day. Until next time, be it till you see it.
That's all I got for this episode of the Be It Till You See It podcast. One thing that would help both myself and future listeners is for you to rate the show and leave a review. And follow or subscribe for free wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, make sure to introduce yourself over at the Be It Pod on Instagram. I would love to know more about you. Share this episode with whoever you think needs to hear it. Help us and others be it till you see it. Have an awesome day.
Be It Till You See It is a production of the Bloom Podcast Network. If you want to leave us a message or a question that we might read on another episode, you can text us at +1 310-905-5534 or send a DM on Instagram at Be It Pod.
It's written, filmed, and recorded by your host, Leslie Logan, and me, Brad Crowell.
It is transcribed, produced, and edited by the epic team at Desenio.co.
Our theme music is by Ali at Apex Production Music, and our branding by designer and artist Gianfranco Cioffi.
Special thanks to Melissa Solomon for creating our visuals.
Also to Angelina Herrico for adding all of our content to our website. And finally, to Meredith Root for keeping us all on point and on time.
All right, my coffee lovers. I got something for you. And I know most of you are coffee lovers because if you're listening to this, you have lots of things you're doing and coffee is something that you are taking with you everywhere you go. In fact, I know the Pilates instructors around here are taking coffee, kombucha, tea, and water into every class that they take. So this one is amazing because this is Pure Cafe Bold. They have two options for you. They've got black coffee and then they've got a caramel coffee latte, which is amazing. And here's why it's amazing. It's pre-brewed. So it comes in this amazing little packet. And you can actually just take the packet in to your office, your work, on a plane, like we've been doing. And then you pour hot water in and boom, you've got coffee. And this coffee actually has some amazing stuff. It's not just regular coffee. This coffee supports your immune system. It boosts cognitive function, increases stamina, it reduces stress, and it has cordyceps.
And what are cordyceps, you ask? Oh, that's right. Brad's here. Nature's powerful secret energizer, a rare species of fungi, cordyceps is renowned for its invigorating properties and centuries-old use in traditional medicine, packed with essential nutrients. This natural adaptogen boosts stamina and supports overall well-being. And seriously, it's actually super simple to make. Leslie and I have taken it camping.
Yeah.
I'll use it in the afternoon.
We're taking it everywhere because I'm tired of conferences and different hotels having burnt coffee.
It's 1,000 times better than the terrible coffee that you get on an airplane.
And the black coffee is like
less than a dollar a packet. So it's like, it's really kind of amazing.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of the caramel myself.
He
the
does
caramel
like
has
it.
A little bit of milk in it. So.
It has some dairy. So my dairy free peeps, you can't do the caramel, but you can do the black, right?
Yeah. The black coffee is vegan, keto, gluten-free, non-GMO, nut-free, dairy-free, fat-free, and CGMP compliant.
All right. So here's the deal. You need to go to beitpod.com/coffee. BEITPOD.com/coffee. And when you do that, you are going to be able to get some amazing coffee that we're loving. You can buy it as a one-time purchase, or you can actually get it as a subscription. There's even family packs. So if you know that you've got a lot of coffee drinkers in your household, this is amazing. And it's honestly cheaper than all the coffees we've been making at home. So we are so excited. I hope you are. Go to beitpod.com/coffee. And, you know, cheers to you and I. Every morning, we'll be drinking the same coffee together. Woo!